Where's the, there's mentioned the case that's ongoing now, recently, in the paper?
Yeah, there's an article in the Jerusalem Post yesterday. Morty happened to see it also, it seemed from
Senator
Chava, yeah, maybe it was in both. It was primarily, maybe it was only in Chava, maybe actually. I don't know. It was in one of the papers that illustrated some of the other sides of the issue that we talked about yesterday. That the article, those articles, a little vague. It seemed like it was a little cynical, right? I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
It's hard to know exactly what the article was trying to say, but it basically described the situation, which we addressed yesterday as one of the pitfalls or loopholes to try to fill in, that theoretically a woman, that wasn't really, I don't think there was a prenup discussed there, but it just addressed the other part of the equation, that theoretically women can abuse the system too. And not theoretically, but actually it happens, and this was a case that described that, I don't want to get the details wrong. I don't know if the article was 100% clear on all the details, but the essence of the case seemed to be that the woman refused to receive a get for many years, 14 years, something like that, and that the premise or the reason for doing so apparently was because she wanted to continue to be supported by the husband during all that time. And after that period ended, or at some point, apparently the Beis Din intervened and was able to compel her to accept the divorce, but also apparently granted her a large settlement for something, which was not clear from the article why she got a settlement. But it kind of highlights where the abuse is. It kind of combines three different types of abuse of the system that could happen on the side of the woman. That, first of all, get refusal happens in both directions. That the man can refuse to give it and the woman can refuse to receive it. Two, that the obligation of mizonos from the husband to the wife could also be exploited and could also be a motive specifically to not end the marriage on the wife's side, and that's something we want to avoid any of the proposed solutions falling into that trap. And that's also one of the concerns that we discussed yesterday. And also, take it a step beyond, the idea that the wife should be, you know, rewarded, so to speak, at the end of that process, as if she was the victim, when in the case that was described yesterday, she was the perpetrator. So that's clearly not legitimate either. So that highlights some of the pitfalls, and hopefully a carefully written agreement avoids those problems. We mentioned yesterday about how it shouldn't be triggered just when there's a separation that may not actually lead to divorce. So maybe a clause should be put in, has been put in, that the wife has to clearly state that she's initiating the divorce process and therefore triggering the prenup obligations, and that also the husband should also be able to exempt himself from the obligations if the wife is failing to accept the get, failing to accept the rulings of Beis Din and the like. So that also has to be addressed as far as the agreement is concerned. Was there a question before? Okay, so basically we have a lot of things we could be reading together, so we'll have to decide what to do first. So I'll basically just try to outline some things, and then maybe we'll decide what we want to read together, because there's just a lot of material on this issue. That essentially, so as far as I have here, we have the Gris Moshe that we read most of the other day, which I want to come back to. There is an essay in this journal, Shari Tzadek, by Rav Dychowski. Rav Dychowski is a very well-respected dayan, who I believe was a candidate for chief rabbi last time around. And he also discusses the question of Ones Mamon. He has an article in Tchumen of a different length, but the same basic point, which I'd also like, time permitting, to maybe look at with you together, but basically making the point that even if we assume that ones mamon is considered to be ones, Still, we have to figure out what kind of degree we're talking about, and that monetary fine, that's not enough to convince someone who really wants to stay happily married to divorce his wife, may not necessarily be that kind of an onus. So, you know, if we're talking about monetary cost, that's only enough to convince someone who has actually decided he no longer wants to be with his wife, but just is refusing to formalize that process, that's a different level of pressure. So that might be more legitimate. So it's a topic of a discussion here that Taichovsky has, building off of Ramosha's position in the Tshuva. So time permitting, maybe we can look at that together. Here, this is a journal, Divrei Mishpat, which is available in the library. A lot of fascinating articles in it. One point that we mentioned yesterday, in the question of onus nafshe, that if somebody is forced to do something basically by themselves because they made an agreement at an earlier time and now they're bound to the agreement that they entered into, so should that create a situation where that's also undue pressure, even though it came from the person who is the subject of that pressure? So we mentioned yesterday that's problematic. I mean, the truth is it's machlokas in Shulchan Aruch, and there are those who are makel on that also, but there are those who are machmir on it. Zalman Nechemia, we mentioned yesterday, as one who had been machmir in practice about this issue. So in this journal, Divrei Mishpat, he has an article in which he discusses that. He has an article about Get Musa, where he talks about what is it that creates a Get Musa, and the whole question of, it's a very lumdish article, where he talks about, you know, the idea of pressure, when somebody is pressured to do something, when is it their decision, when is it not their decision? You know, what's the difference in halacha? For example, if somebody holds a gun to your head, he starts off talking about this, the famous position of the Rambam, which not all the other Rishonim agreed to. But, you know, we know there are certain dinim that are Yehari Valyavor, that even if somebody says, I'll kill you if you do this, if you don't do this, you're still not permitted to do it. Right? Like killing somebody else, or Gili Arayas, or Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam's position, which other Rishonim disagreed with, but the Rambam maintained that if someone puts a gun to your head and says, do one of the Yehari Valyavors, you're not allowed to do it. But if you do it, then you're not subject to the onesh. Because lamaisa, it's still called onus. Right? The same way that if somebody forces you to do any avera, so you shouldn't be liable. So the Rambam's position is that even when you're not supposed to go along with the onus, you're still not punishable for the avera because you are still doing it under duress. It's an interesting split. Right? Which always made me wonder about the whole Chiddush HaSmicha. Maybe I just have to look more carefully in this discussion. This is a topic relevant again to next year. We've mentioned all the segues between Gittin and Sanhedrin. But one of the topics that will come up in Sanhedrin is the whole Chiddush HaSmicha issue, that there was an effort in the 1400s, 1500s, to restart the real smicha system, the idea that the actual full-blown smicha that we need in order to carry out all the functions of the Sanhedrin could be restarted even though it's been lost. That's really a chiddush of the Rambam. The Rambam in Perush Mishnayos has such an idea. So the reason they wanted to do this at that time is because there were many people who had committed avodah zarah under duress during the Inquisition in the late 1400s, and therefore they were theoretically chayav karis. But the Gemara says that kol chayvei krisus shalaku nifteru midei krisuson, that if one gets malchus for the avera that otherwise should get karis, so you're potter from karis. So if we had a bezdin that could actually administer malchus, we could save all these people from karis. Very cheerful. So what I was never clear on, again, maybe this is addressed somewhere, I haven't really given it the full attention it deserves, but it seems like this is all based on the Rambam, the Rambam's invention in Chiddush HaSmicha. And the Rambam, L'shitaso here, it says that you're not going to be chayav yonesh if you do an avera under duress. Maybe it's a question of what kind of duress, maybe it wasn't always life-threatening duress, but essentially the Rambam has the split that even if you're not supposed to give in to the pressure, but if you do, it's still not considered your liability because it's still an avera that was done at gunpoint.
Why would you then not go ahead and do that?
Well, because still morally it's still wrong. But, I mean, a lot of things nowadays we don't get punished for most things that we do in this world. And we still try to behave off the halacha anyway. And so if you still maintain, you know, one could also get more technical about it, and one could say that there's a chiyuv kiddush Hashem in those circumstances, which really a mitzvah taseh, it's a different din, it's not like, you know, if you could get very lumpish about it, you could say that in such a scenario, one who would do avodah zarah or gilui arayos is not actually violating gilui arayos, he's being mevatel the aseh of kiddush Hashem, and that there's no onish for that. Maybe, you know, but it's an interesting avenue to explore for a different time. But the point being here that on the one hand the Rambam says that, but he also says that one is not permitted to heal himself through a avodah zarah, let's say, even in life-threatening circumstances, because of harvei yavor. And if one does that, then he is subject to punishment. So what's the difference? Right? So apparently there's a difference between the onus that comes from gunpoint, where somebody says, do this or I'll kill you. That's one type of onus that is more all-encompassing. And there's the onus of a situation of somebody who feels very pressured. He has to do something because he has to save his life, and this is the only way he can feel to save his life. So that's also onus, but it's apparently a lower degree of onus. There's still a decision there. Right? There's still a decision that you're making to do this, even though you're making this decision because you feel you have no other options. And so he discusses this that point at length in this article here to figure out how exactly we should categorize when something is your decision and when it's not your decision, and when it's considered to be your action and not your action. And therefore he suggests that when somebody pre-commits himself to something, even though that is theoretically coming from his own decision and one could consider it to be his own action therefore, and in general, when we talk about Geb Me'usa, you know, what is the issue of Geb Me'usa? It's not really some arcane concept that a get has to be given just out of, you know, total happiness. The idea being that the get has to be the decision of the Baal. It has to be that the husband is deciding to divorce his wife. And if it's coming externally, so then it's not coming from him. So that's what we're always concerned about. We're worried that if the civil court's going to compel it or somebody else is going to beat him up in circumstances when it's not justified, so then it's not him doing this. And then how is that a get? He's play acting, basically. So if that's the case, so what about a situation like this, where a situation where somebody commits himself in advance? And that's what we discussed yesterday, was one of the questions about other types of prenuptial commitments. So should we be concerned that that's called onus d'nafshe? This is an onus a person brought about himself. And therefore, it's still a problem. So we mentioned it's machlokas in Shulchan Aruch. Some will accept that. And others won't accept that. And the Rebbe Zalman Nechemya has been quoted as not accepting that. Rebbe Zalman Nechemya, we should emphasize again, is one of the authors of the prenup that we recommend, which is not based on such a principle, but a prenup that would basically say, yes, I commit myself to doing this, and now he feels obligated because of his own pre-commitment, so that he considers to be a problem. Again, it's a machlokes in Shulchan Aruch. So he explains the lumdus here, and I guess the key line, we'll just focus on that towards the end, if I can find it quickly. See if this one paragraph does it. Hopefully this will be clear. Lefi zeh yesh lomar shekol she'osa maisa avera ba'onis d'nafshe. Eino ones ela ratzon. She'er ha'pu'ula naises b'ratzon ve'eino mukrach lasos ha'maisa. Right, so somebody who does any action or any avera with a situation of ones, but it's an ones that he put upon himself. So that's not really ones, that's really his desire, because the pu'ula was done through his action and he didn't have to do the action. Nimsa shamaisa naisa baratzen gomer umela baha isu labayla. So therefore, let's say if it was nus, so that creates an issur to the husband. We were talking about before this, so let's say a woman is mezana in order to save her life, so she's still going to be prohibited to her husband. That's not considered to be, for example, as if she were raped. If she was raped, she wouldn't be prohibited to her husband. But that's not considered onus, that's still considered to be her decision. So such an onus should be the ratzon, so you might think, okay, so a get given under such circumstances is also called ratzon. Let's say if somebody's giving a gift to somebody, or he's giving a get, then he does that because of onus that he created. Even though that is considered like willing, the ratzon that's required for a gift or for a get, to give or to get, to mix the languages, that is that you should want that the matana should be that of the recipient, and that he should want that his wife should be divorced from him. So that ratzon doesn't have. When he does that because of an onus that he created on himself. The action that he's doing, so that came out of an onus that he placed upon himself, but he still doesn't want the result of this action to take place, so that's the issue we have with the get. The get should be that the husband is actually interested in divorcing his wife, and that's not going to be true, even though the onus that's forcing him is one that he willingly took on in an earlier stage. So that's really the key point to this article that's relevant for us. It's about a 20-page article, so I guess we were able to zero in on the one paragraph. It's interesting, just so you know, the case that he was talking about that prompted the article was a different kind of situation. It is a chola mesukin shayazaka kutrufa. Let's say you have a person who is in danger of dying. He's very sick, so for other reasons, he's at risk of his life. So somebody has the antidote, somebody has the medicine that this person needs. He says, if you divorce your wife, I'll give you this medicine. So is that basically like saying somebody is forced because he's going to die otherwise? Or say that, no, that it's not like somebody created this pressure on him and said, I'll kill you. He's giving him a gift, essentially. And the gift happens to be a gift that's going to save his life. So there's a whole lumdus about this in the context. He talks about this onus d'nafshe issues. Okay, maybe we'll get more into that. There's another important article in this journal, which God willing we'll get to next week, in the major issue of conditions in Gittin. It's a different point. But that was one point that we addressed yesterday. So today, we'll go back and forth, and I do want to come back to this Reb Moshe, but let's first go to another Reb Moshe. The question of, there's actually, Morty, if you want to send me another one, Evan Ezer Chele Gimel Simen Mandalit. Yes. It also could be useful. So essentially, let's talk for a minute about the New York State get law, which is a source of great controversy. So there are two versions of the New York State get law. The first is far less controversial, maybe not even controversial at all, and the later one is much more controversial. And it goes to great extremes in the controversy, so I'll just talk about it broadly and let's get into some details. So the first get law was that in granting a divorce, I think we explained this the other day, just Thursday, that in granting a divorce, so, is that you? So, the court has the right to decide not to grant a divorce if there is a barrier to remarriage. So if the husband is refusing to give his wife a get, so therefore she has a barrier to remarriage, so the court can say, we're not going to grant you a divorce. So okay, that's not so bad, because it's all the same thing, it's all about the divorce. So it's basically something the government will give him in exchange for doing this. So, okay, so that doesn't necessarily create any kind of pressure. That's more organic. The second get law is a massive controversy. So the second get law basically says, this is from 1992, that when the government presides over a divorce, so different states have different laws in terms of how they divide up marital property. So some just split it 50-50. And in some, there is this more complicated equation of equitable distribution where they try to figure out who deserves what. So in New York, you have such a system. And what this get law did was that it ruled that, it made it the case that the judge, when deciding how to divide up the property, could decide that a barrier to remarriage should be also one of the considerations he takes in. So if the husband is refusing to issue a get, which means now she can't remarry, so maybe the court will say, oh, wow, you know what? So let's take away everything from him. Let's take away his house. Let's give the wife the house, the car, the pool, the helicopter, the mansion in Argentina, the baseball card collection, you know, whatever it is, and let's really go after him. So does that not constitute at least the threat of onus alidei mamon, that essentially he's going to have stuff taken away from him that should create a onus? So there is a wide range of opinions about this. There are many great rabbanim who believe that this is a terrible thing, that this creates the specter of onus over a get, and so much so that, who knows, maybe it clouds all of the getting in New York, because maybe any get that's given, we don't know, that maybe the husband is worried that if he doesn't do this, he's going to have all his property taken away from him. So maybe even when it's not a case that has been protracted and been a topic of much controversy, maybe even what would be a more simple divorce, maybe we should worry about those getting to, which there are some who have maintained that that's the impact of this law, and it's a terrible law. So there are those who have taken positions like that. Rabbi Bleich among them is written along those lines. Rabbi Bleich, it's interesting, so this law has been in effect now for 23 years, so it's not going anywhere. But there were those who had said that, you know, it should hopefully be repealed, it should be, it does a lot of damage. So Rabbi Bleich felt from a legal perspective that it's inherently flawed, because since it invalidates, in his understanding, the get, so you're basically saying the law is telling you you have to give a religious divorce, and the law makes it impossible to give a religious divorce. So therefore, on that grounds, it should be clearly a nullity, and it should fall away. But that hasn't happened. So that continues to be a major debate. So Bleich feels this way. Rabbi Yashiv has a tshuva, which I think I'll read to you in a minute, where he also took a stance essentially like that. And, you know, there are many who feel this is a serious concern. On the other hand, there are those who either feel that it's not so terrible, or maybe it's not even bad at all. There are those who feel that it doesn't create a get musa. The esteemed head of the RCA Beis Din, by Gedalia Dov Schwartz, has written an article essentially defending the law in a way where he doesn't seem to really feel it's a problem at all. And Rabbi Michael Broyd wrote an article in Tradition many years ago where he said he thinks the law is a bad idea because of all of these issues. This is, in general, it's a bad idea to get the government involved in a religious issue, especially when it's a matter of machlokas. If it was that the whole world agreed and it's just a few miscreants who are abusing it, so then okay, maybe there's a lot to talk about. But if it's really a matter of machlokas, So for the government then to get involved and impose this position on people who don't agree halachically, he thinks that that's it's a bad idea. But he thinks after the fact there are a number of reasons why we don't have to invalidate a get that is given under that framework. And he has essentially seven reasons, depends how you count them, it could be more reasons, seven or eight factors which he throws into the mix, which I'll discuss, where he essentially says these could all be invoked as reasons to say that at least b'di'evet, it doesn't actually invalidate the gittin that are given under those circumstances. Although, again, he thinks the law is a bad idea, but not as much of a catastrophe as others think that it is. Rabbi Chaim Malinowitz, who is now a Rav in Beit Shemesh, maybe more well known for his position as the general editor of the Art Scroll of Gemara. So Rabbi Chaim Malinowitz wrote responses to Rabbi Breuer in tradition, I think, where he took issue with this and he expressed his position that he thinks it is a disaster, it is a catastrophe, and again, the position consistent with Rabbi Bleich and Rabbi Yashiv and others, that it's a very serious problem. Rav Schechter, I actually asked him yesterday what he thought about it, 2 days ago, well, yesterday, what he thinks about this. So he thought that Lemaisa, since we mentioned Ones Al Yidei Mamon, is a machlokes, so even though l'chadchila we don't use ones al yidei mamon, but he thinks that b'di'eved one can rely on the day in the Shulchan Aruch that we don't possibly get for ones al yidei mamon, so he essentially wasn't worried about it, that it should create such a circumstance, at least b'di'eved. So you have a range of views about how to look at a law like this, so let's try to now get into some of the nitty-gritty. So first, let's look at a tshuva of Rav Moshe's, which was addressing a different type of law. Let's see what principles he addresses here. Here he's talking about a different law in a different country, in South Africa. So this was Chelek Dalet Siman Kuv Vav. So the title of the tshuva is Be'inyin Hashtadlos Lasos Chok Shehudi Hanifrad Me'ishto Begerishin Shel Hamedina Yitzdarich Lepotru Beget Kasha. So concerning the efforts that have been made to make a law that a Jew who separates from his wife with a civil divorce should have to give her a valid get. So this is addressed to a Rav in Johannesburg. This is a different country. So he writes here, Hinei b'davar hishtadlus, she'asu chok b'parlament, again you see it's a different country, she'kol megarish ishto kushu ben bris, yemuchu yuvliftor as ishto begim, gam beget kashu v'besim kashu she'yisrael. So this effort to make a law that whoever should divorce should do so with a get kosher and a bezdin, so that's definitely a big inyan. Ve'ein bazeh mishum isui ayidei nachrim, and that itself is not a problem of compulsion through the non-Jews. Me'acher debiyado shlo garish klal gam lo begerish in shal medina, that if he wants, he doesn't have to get divorced at all. He doesn't have to get divorced through the medina. So it's Rach Machmas Ritzona, Lakabal Gerishin Shal Medina, Lihipater Michiyuvo Ishazu. Right? It's only because he wants to get a divorce from the Medina to exempt him from his obligation to his wife and to take another woman, to marry somebody else. Behem lo yitnu lo below get kasha shal Yisrael lo tzalitin haget. Right? This sounds similar to the first New York State get law. Right? It's basically saying that if the issue is they're telling you you want to get a civil divorce, you have to have a Jewish divorce, so okay, so then he doesn't want to get divorced at all, so let him skip the whole thing. But if he wants to get divorced civilly, and the government says, we're only going to give you the civil divorce if you do a Jewish divorce also, so Moshe says, I don't see a problem with that. So this is very comparable to somebody who doesn't want to give a get. If they give him thousands of shkolim, so then he decides he does want to give a get. The lo nechshav yisui, that's not considered to be compulsion. So he's more interested in the money than he is in holding out the get. And this is what happens every day, Meshachtim L'Habal Itein Get B'Chol Tzvus Yisrael, that they bribe husbands to give gets everywhere in the Jewish community. V'Isoy Shu Pasul Hu Kishem Makin Oso. The Isoy, that's a problem, is if you hit him, or Machzikin Oso Beis Asur, and you're going to put him in jail, or Oso Mal Yisur Machayir, and you do other problems for him, Kidei Shu Itein Get to Nech Shem Makarish B'Onash Apostle. Then he's considered to be compelled, and that is possible. V'Chein, Af onus mamon b'kiyai gavna, and so too a pressure that's monetary in such a way shiachayvu osa medina litein la mishalo, that if the medina is going to compel him to give money from himself la onesh al she'ena nosin la get, as a punishment in that he's not giving her a get, hu nechshav megarish ba onus mamon shel yafsid, then that's considered to be monetary coercion, that he doesn't want to lose money. Someone is going to grab a big sum of money from the husband, so, or if somebody is going to say, I'll take away a lot of money from you and I won't give it back unless you give a get, so then that's like an onus. Okay, so that's a discussion whether an onus mammon is considered to be onus, as we've seen. So take a look at Shulchan Aruch, Kufa Medal, the Ramah, Piskei Tshuva. That's the whole story. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Aval kishenosin lo mammon sheyirtze b'shvil zel iten get. If you're going to give him money that he'll want because of this to give a get, who pashut she'ainu onus k'maisim b'choyom. That's not onus. That's what happens every day. The people get bribed to do it. And so too, it's exactly like that. If he wants to get the civil approval from the Medina, so then that's fine. Again, this is essentially the same, he's right in South Africa, but this is essentially the same makeup of the New York State first get law. And even if somebody is in jail for some other thing, V'ha'isha, this comes up a lot also, V'ha'isha hayala misha yishtadel ho'tzio l'chashi, let's say the wife has some way that she can make efforts to get him released, kishi yitin get, nami ein zeh b'chashivas megarish bonus. And if she wants to do that, if she wants to find a method to get him released, if he'll give a get, so then that's also not called onus. D'me'achar d'lo hayala ha'yisur inshalo k'dei shi yitin get, since they're not hurting him to give a get, they're hurting him for some other reason, they put him in jail for some other reason, as soon as the get titles a loss of the, and giving the get is to get out of the problem, that's considered to be full will, and it makes sense, so that's a good get, even if there was no chi of gerish, there was no kfiya, it doesn't matter, it doesn't require any kind of a threshold of mandatory divorce, that whatever it is, but if this is why he does it for, even if there's no grounds at all, but he does it out of desire for some benefit, that's okay. This parallels somewhat, if you remember, our discussion, I guess, last week about Hachakas Rebbeinu Tam, that some of the Rishonim understood that essentially it's holding back positives and not doing anything negative. But if you recall, we discussed that Binyamin Zev wrote exactly this case, that normally we would intervene, let's say, if, or we might intervene depending on the circumstances, if there was a Jew who was incarcerated, if it was a matter that we should intervene, you know, then maybe we would. And if you're going to say that, but I won't because he's not giving his wife a get, that that's acceptable within our Halakas Rebbeinu Tam, that to refuse to do that would be legitimate, and to only do that in order to get the get would also be legitimate. So Rebbe Moshe is saying the other half of it here. Aval yitzdarchu liros, but they have to be careful to see shachok yikvu b'tzura shul yitnu gerishin shal medina el acharei shifterena beget begezin kasher. They have to make sure that the rule should be that they shouldn't give the civil divorce until after he should give her a get and a bezin kasher. V'tia mutaris lehinase l'acher mitzara torah v'emunah, and he's able to marry somebody else from the perspective of Torah and faith. The Miyikvu Balashin Shman Brist Sarach Lahat Hetanisuov Acheres Lo Rak Lagarishim Adina Elagam Get Kashim Bezrashil Yisrael. If they're going to make the rule that, okay, that a Jew, if he wants to marry somebody else, needs two things, needs a Gerishim, a civil divorce, and also needs a get, Vimisi Yisha Blo Get Kashim Yehanesh, and if he's going to marry somebody without get kosher, he'll be punished. just like somebody who marries without a civil divorce is could be arrested for bigamy if you marry a second wife while you still have a first wife legally. So if they're going to phrase it like that, lo baratz li lahachshiv shehu b'lo ones, it's not so clear to me that that's not called ones. It's because that circumstance, it's not that the get is holding him back from getting the civil divorce. It's that they're making a rule that somebody who's married, that he can't marry somebody else, even though he has a civil divorce, as long as he doesn't also have a get. Even though he knew this at the beginning and he was okay with this, so even that he knew that at the beginning, but when he decides now he doesn't want to divorce her, and it's only because he's afraid of getting punished that he doesn't go back on it, and he is now giving the get because of a punishment, so that seems like that might be considered to be an onus. Right, you see the distinction? That basically it's okay to say that you won't get a civil divorce unless you have a Jewish divorce also. To say that if you don't have a Jewish divorce and you try to marry somebody else and get arrested for bigamy, that's a problem, because then that's basically saying that the government's going to punish you for not giving a Jewish divorce. So that's dangerous. But to say it the other way around, that we won't grant the civil divorce, we won't give you this gift, so to speak, unless you give a get, that's acceptable to him. Sagam Kevin Shabun Sena Rabin Ikikilo Sarashoyim Shim Reform the Conservative Shtakhish Dadl Shia Khik Shitan Lega Kashra Slotodoxy Ulahaz Bilahem Shamashu get kasher nasi rovet adoksi get kasher gametz the reformer conservative and get shalbeizim reformer conservative and kolimitz of Israel. Okay, also have to make sure that it'll be orthodox get ubedaver she eila hashniya ubedaver she eila hashniya. And considering the second question, shemashofet medina yatil al haba. This is going to be the key point now. Right. So until now, basically paralleled the first get law and expressed some important positions about that. But now, what about this next part? What if the judge is going to say that unless he divorces his wife, then I am going to make you pay? The judge says, I'll make you pay for her mizonos, and for all of her needs, ad shigarshana beget kasher. So is that a problem if the judge is then also throwing that? Then until you do it, I'm going to make you pay for support. Until he divorces her, he's obligated to support her. Medina. So he's obligated anyway in this, and she's also entitled if he's not supporting her. It's legitimate for a wife to go to the civil authorities and say, my husband is not supporting me. So, fine, for them to impose that, that still seems legitimate. V'af shehem yosifu, and even if they're going to add on a little bit, shetarach lezona, af kishi osa malacha, umarvechas nami, we discussed yesterday, I think, that one of the possible loopholes, that if you rely on the ksuba without the actual prenup, so it doesn't match up 100%, because the ksupa doesn't clearly obligate the husband to support the wife if she's making money, or if she's making money that she's not turning over to him. So what about that differentiation? So what Moshe just said, well, the court's going to make her pay mizonos, make him pay mizonos, no biggie, he's obligated mizonos anyway. So that was the first part. But what about if it's not going to correlate? The court might make him pay mizonos even though she's making a ton of money. And it's not clear that the halacha would have such a requirement. So essentially, Moshe is a big chiddush here, right? That even though the mizonos, as they define it, may differ from what the halacha requires. still the concept of mizonos, that is his actual obligation. So for the court to impose that would also be legitimate. And that essentially, therefore, the get is not considered to be forced. The get is, I'm doing this get so that I will get out of this obligation, which is a form of the obligation the Torah has. Even though it's different. So that's a very significant chiddush that Rav Moshe has there in the last sentence of this tshuva.
What's the
logic? Logic being that essentially the details of mizonos are apparently secondary, that the concept of mizonos is a Torah-sanctioned concept. And to give a get to be released from that is not some external compulsion. That is essentially a function of marriage, and you're saying that I just want to end this obligation, so that actually is what divorce is. It's not an external compulsion. And the detail that it's not exactly the mizonos as the halacha dictates it is not apparently a significant detail. That if the court's going to define mizonos differently, Rav Moshe doesn't even feel he has to bring a proof to this point. He simply states that that's not a problem. So that's a very significant chiddush, right? So what do we see from Rav Moshe? We see that something comparable to the first New York State get law, totally fine. Although the detail that you should make sure that it's phrased as you won't get a civil divorce, not that if you remarry without a get, you're going to be punished, because that would be more problematic. But if it's just you won't get a civil divorce, okay. That's point one. Point two, which is going to be relevant to a lot of other things, including maybe the prenup, what about a court-mandated obligation of mizonos? Well, that's fine. It's a Torah obligation, and you have the right to have the civil authorities be invoked to enforce that Torah obligation. But it's not exactly the same. It doesn't matter. It's still mizonos. It doesn't bother us that it's not necessarily going to correlate to the exact details. That part is a big chiddush, or at least a significant chiddush. Now, it was important. I wanted to read you that first, because this tshuva is invoked in Rabbi Yoshev's writings. So Rabbi Yoshev, who is very concerned about the get law, so, now just it's a much shorter comment, but just to read to you from this is from Kovetz Tshuvas, Chelek Aleph, and Simon Kofpei. Kovetz Tshuvas of Yashiv. So here he writes, Benidon, Shashofet Ba Lufsok, Latova Saisha, that the judge is going to paskin for the well being, for the benefit of the woman, Biglal Shahabal Misarev Lases Loget, because the husband is refusing to give her a get. So if it's just based on the law, so we're missing the condition that the Bezdin has to command the compulsion. And there's no difference. The yoz mehachok v'hagormim Hagomrim Lishuro, I think maybe Gormim, the ones who created the law and who caused for it to be passed, that they happen to be Jews. So should we say that's like the Jews telling the non-Jews to enforce the Bezdin ruling? So he says, no, that's not acceptable svara. He also has in parentheses here, a Magam Shlufi. That this whole idea that the court can act for the husband's refusal to give a get, both in Kalali, Gamba Ofen Shaisha wrote Lafki Atzmi Tachas Baila Shalobit Sedek Lafi Din Torah, who Arehu Ben Nigar Halacha, that this whole idea that it should be, even if it's not according to Din Torah, that's a halachic problem. So let's say if the woman comes to Bezdin and the husband is refusing to pay attention to the Bezdin, Bezdin hotzi seiruv alav, and the Bezdin issued a seiruv, if it's a situation where kfi is justified and the Bezdin has paskin like that, sheget ye kasher im biglal ha'iyum l'rotz alav l'Bezdin. So if they go through a process of Bezdin, you get permission of Bezdin to get it from the civil courts, so then there's what to talk about. So Okay, fine, so that's not considered to be a violation of our cause. But that's not the general situation. So any changes from that kind of formula is going to bring about concern of get me'usa. So now there is an addition that's more directly relevant from Rabbi David Aryeh Morgenstern, who was, I think, Rabbi Yoshua's assistant or somebody who was involved in conveying his psakim. Who wrote Be'inyan HaChok HaChadash concerning the new law in Arzel Sabris? Right now, we're going to see a specific description of the second get law. Be'inyan Chiluk Rechush Mizonos. Right, so the idea of dividing the property and the support. Kasher Baal V'Ishto Boim Liparid Ali Piarkoseim, when a husband and wife come for a civil divorce. Shalu das mevi rabbi agarim yosef shalom yosef shlita im lo hayo mokum lahachshir get hanichtev tachas hashbos achok. So Rabbi Yosef was asked that maybe this new law, now he's explicitly describing the second get law, that maybe that should be allowed al pi divrei Igros Moshe and Ezra chilek dalitz and mekuvav, the Igros Moshe that we just did together. So Rabbi Yosef was asked, maybe that should be a basis to validate the second get law. That there's no connection at all between that tshuva and the Igros Moshe and the new law in America. And it's explicit that in the Igros Moshe, because Zelashono, what did he write? What we just read together. He said that until they get divorced, so the husband is obligated anyway in all the mizonos and all of her needs. So what do you get from that? The Hainu Shigras Moshe Lo Mairi Ela B'Kiyai Gavna Shemigil Isha Mizonos Al Pidin. That we're talking about a situation where there's mizonos that's due to her. V'lefi HaChok HaChadash HaShofed Yochol L'Chayiv HaBaal Afilu B'Mokum Shelo Migil Mizonos. Right, so here the judge can obligate in a way that even where there is no mizonos due to her. So it's not clear that Rav Moshe didn't mean that part. You know, that seems like it's a little bit arguable that Rav Moshe wouldn't have endorsed that. But the next sentence, I think, is the ikur. V'gam chiluk nichsei zog eino nichnas legeder shel mizonos. This is really the main point, that the division of property, that's not part of mizonos. There's no din that the husband has to split all the property with her. So that cannot be classified as mizonos. That's really the thrust. The previous sentence, I think, is a little bit arguable, but really the thrust of his distinction between Rav Moshe's tshuva and the get law is this part about the property that's not included in mizonos. And then he adds, afilu amnasa kedei lahavtiach parnasa sa'isha ba'asid, even if he's doing it in order to ascertain her parnasa in the future. Let's say the judge were to say that because she needs to be supported and we can't guarantee that you're going to keep writing checks to her, so I'm going to give her your house so that she can have assets. So even if that's the way it's phrased, he thinks that's still not called mizonos. VMK in the Igros Moshe in Mokom Lismach Alachokanah. So even based on the Igros Moshe, there's no basis to rely on this. So essentially, Rabbi Yosher's position is that this is a concern of Musa, and that one should not compare it to Rav Moshe's tshuva, where he said that, okay, the judge has the right to make it be mizonos, and to enforce that. This is different, because this is about the property. The property has nothing to do with mizonos, even if it was phrased as being connected. One could express it even more clearly also, that it's not stam a difference also between mizonos and the property. It's that mizonos is something that you do when you are married, while the property would be taken away from him in the divorce. And so basically, that's also a very significant difference. What he's essentially saying is that Rav Moshe was only talking, it's a little bit more compelling difference, saying that Rav Moshe was basically saying that mizonos is just something that is a consequence of staying married. And if he wants to give a get to get out of that consequence, that's not called Musa, that's what a get is. But here, taking away the property after the divorce as a punishment for what he's not doing, so that can't be phrased the same way, and that's where you feel there's more of a concern of Musa. So, again, this is basically what we accomplished. We're a little bit behind schedule, and I have to catch the next minute because we'll have to end here. But we expressed the view of the Mechmirim on this view. We saw Rav Moshe's tshuva on a related point, maybe not related enough. We saw the discussion about Onos Leg De'atzmo. So we still now have to explain why those who are okay with the get law, and again, there's two types, there are those who are mamash okay with it, and those who aren't thrilled with it, but don't think it necessarily invalidates gittin or necessarily creates a cloud on all gittin for sure. So why do those feel that way? Why do they differ? So that we'll have to start with, God willing, on Monday, and then get into also the topic of conditional getting things like that. All right, I wish everyone a good Shabbos. All the good things, and I will see you.